if you set this up correctly, there's a way to do it so that you don't have to go back to court to do that. You can just figure it out on your own.
Welcome to the Daisy Camp Podcast. Daisy Camp is a woman's nonprofit resource for education and empowerment before, during, and after her divorce. It's our mission to be that safe place for you to get support and reliable information that you'll need to grow into your ever-expanding life. Hi, and welcome back to the Daisy Camp Podcast. My name is Emily John, and I have a wonderful episode for you. This is kind of part two of a three-part series with Angela Hart. And today we're talking a little bit about cash flow. But I'd like to start by welcoming Angela. Thank you for coming in today.
Yes, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So in our last episode, Angela, we were speaking a little bit about property, how to decide what's marital, what's non-marital, some of the questions that come up. And today we're talking a little bit about cash flow. So I'd like you to start by just giving me the overview. What is cash flow? What do we talk about in that bucket, if you will?
Yeah. So cash flow, basically that means like what happens post-divorce. How are you going to support your family in regards to child support, and how are you going to support yourself in regards to spousal maintenance? So those are the two big issues regarding, one, child support, and two, spousal maintenance. And spousal maintenance, another term for that would be considered alimony.
So okay, sure. And so are you kind of outlining, like, going forward, how am I going to, you know, how much money do I need? How much money do they need? All of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So what happens in a divorce is you have to figure out, you know, how are we going to go from one household into two? Mm-hmm. And then on the other side of things, you have your children. If you have children, it's like, how are we going to support them? Mm-hmm. You're both required to pay for all of your children's expenses. 100%. And you have to figure out, how are you going to divide those expenses up? And so the first thing that people have to figure out is, well, how is child support going to work? How are we going to cover all these expenses that the kids have? And, you know, how are we going to divide those amongst ourselves? And then the second thing would be in relationship to spousal maintenance is, if one person can't really meet their budget needs, mm-hmm. you know, is there enough money on the other side to transfer to that person in the form of spousal maintenance? And if there is, how much is going to be able to be transferred? And for how long is that going to happen? Mm-hmm. And so those are the issues involving those two things. And I can talk a little bit about child support first.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So child support is kind of the easier thing to talk about, because there's a formula for that.
Oh, okay.
So in Minnesota, there are some child support guidelines. And what happens with those guidelines is you plug in your numbers into the formula, and there's a child support number that comes up.
Okay.
And so what they look at is, they look at the parents' gross income mm-hmm. for the month, and then they look at the number of overnights per calendar year for the children. Mm-hmm. And they plug those numbers and those figures into the guidelines, and they come up with what's called an income percentage. And this income percentage is called the parental income for child support. Mm-hmm. It's a PICS for short. It's kind of like an acronym, PICS percentage. And it basically breaks down like how much one parent should be paying for activities and how much the other parent should be paying. And sometimes it's equal if the income is substantially the same and you have almost equal parenting time. And sometimes if one person makes a lot more money, it's going to be vastly different. Mm-hmm. And so what happens with child support is, at the end of the formula, there's a dollar amount that one parent will need to pay the other parent. Mm-hmm. And that gets done on a monthly basis. They also add into the formula who's covering the medical insurance premiums, mm-hmm. the dental insurance, and then, you know, they figure that out based on your PICS percentage. And then they figure out childcare. If there is childcare, they add that into the formula. Mm-hmm. And then there's a net child support number at the very bottom when you adjust it based on who's paying for what and how that works out. And then what you have to remember when you're dealing with child support is that child support only covers the basics. Mm-hmm. So that means it's food, clothing, shelter, maybe some transportation, education, but that's it.
Okay.
It doesn't cover all those extracurricular activities that you choose to have your kids enrolled in. For example, sports or clubs or dance or music. Or the gear that goes with it, mm-hmm. or the tournaments, or driver's education classes,
mm-hmm.
or haircuts. Well, haircuts might be another one, but you know, some of those things that you choose to enroll your kids in, those are all extra. Those are not necessary. Those are not basic needs of your kid. So then you have to figure out, well, how do we pay for all those expenses
right.
as well?
Mm-hmm.
And so then you still have to determine that, well, are we going to pay for those equally? Are we going to divide that up? But if one person is making a lot more money than the other one and you pay for those expenses equally, then one person is paying a larger percentage of their income mm-hmm. towards kids' expenses, which ultimately might not be the fairest thing to do. So mm-hmm. you could also say, well, maybe we divide all those as well based on that PICS percentage. That's an option. It just okay. depends on where your income levels are at mm-hmm. and how you work out dividing up kids' expenses.
Okay. And let's throw in the mix that piece, that time piece. You know, like when you are agreeing on this, obviously, you know, you're at one point in time. Are you agreeing on this for the next year, for the next 5 years, for the next 10 years? How do you figure out what's happening over time?
Yeah. So for children and for child support, it goes until your kids are 18
mm-hmm.
or they graduate from high school, whichever is later. And then when, if you have more than one child, then it continues, it might get adjusted, mm-hmm. you know, once one child turns 18. But basically, child support goes until your kids are no longer considered minors in the state of Minnesota. So it could be for potentially a very long time. You build into, you know, your divorce degree how you're going to adjust so that if things change, like if incomes change or if, you know, one child turns 18, then you build into it. Well, how do you figure out and adjust the amount?
Yes.
And so you kind of build that into your documents. You can then do that on your own.
Okay.
If there's a dispute, usually then you end up saying, well, how come if we don't agree on that, then you build in what do you do
okay.
if there's a dispute as mm-hmm. well. And so that's kind of how the contract is set up. Mm-hmm. The one thing to note though is that these guidelines for child support are not required. They're just simply guidelines.
Oh, okay.
So if you're in the court system and the judge is deciding what child support should be, the judge has to go by the state guidelines. But if you're doing this on your own and mm-hmm. you're not in the court system and you're figuring out what the child support is, again, you don't have to go by the child support guidelines. You can figure out whatever you want to do for child support. You just have to show that what you're doing is in the best interest of the children.
Ah, okay. That's interesting. So it's nice that you're kind of setting yourself up for this in that divorce degree for the future as well then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and for those people who already have degrees in place and who need to figure out like, oh, what happens if we need to change it? You can always modify support. You can always modify things. It's you know, you can just do that as part of, you know, in state law, a modification basically says that if your income goes up or down more than 20%,
mm-hmm.
You always have or there's a change of circumstances and they kind of outline what that means. You can change and adjust child support at any time. But if you set this up correctly, there's a way to do it so that you don't have to go back to court to do that. You can just figure it out on your own.
Oh, that's nice to know. Yeah. And way less expensive too. So staying with that, I mean, what happens then in those very initial, like those first few months, like let's say where you're the stay-at-home mom trying to find a job or, you know, things are changing very quickly in these first few months as you're separating, as you're getting this divorce, how is the cash flow affected, you know, in just in that immediate future?
So one of the things that that kind of leads into is the next one, which is spousal maintenance. So I think we'll just go and talk about that a little bit, because Perfect. That would be a good transition into that next cash flow piece. Mm-hmm. So the children, you know, expenses are getting taken care of. You have to look basically on what the actual expenses are, or look at the guideline amounts. Mm-hmm. But the bigger question sometimes for a lot of people is, what about spousal maintenance? Mm-hmm. And that would be cash flow for one of the spouses, not for the children. It has nothing to do with the children's expenses. That's all separate, and that's all part of the child support payment, or how you're handling the children's expenses. Mm-hmm. Spousal support is for the spouse to okay. meet their budget needs. And so it was designed, you know, with the spouse who was at home with the kids for, mm-hmm. you know, many, many years, and then all of a sudden went through a divorce, and it's like, I don't have any income. Mm-hmm. How do I support myself? That's kind of the intention of why spousal support was created to begin with. Mm-hmm. And so the intention is, well, let's figure out a way to get that spouse some funds so that that spouse can be supported post-divorce, and then they can still maintain the same standard of living during the divorce that they had during the marriage. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what is looked at. And so when you're looking at spousal support, you have to figure out, does one spouse need help meeting their budget needs? There's no formula for spousal maintenance in Minnesota.
Okay.
It's not like child support. We can just plug the numbers in and figure something out.
Right.
And so what courts look at when they figure this out is they look at your budget. And so it's very important to figure out a post-divorce budget and be realistic with what those numbers are going to be. Mm-hmm. And so you actually have to do some homework and figure that out. Like, if you're going to be moving into a new place, it's like, okay, well, what is that going to cost? How much money is that going to be out of my budget? Mm-hmm. If your car is old and it's not going to make it for another, you know, 6 months, then what is a new car? Add in a new car payment to your budget, because you might probably will need that down the road.
Sure.
So your budget is going to be very significant when it comes to spousal maintenance. And so what happens then is you look at net income mm-hmm. instead of gross income like you're doing for child support. Mm-hmm. You look at that net income and you look at, okay, so what do I need to make my budget as the spouse who needs it? And then for the spouse who potentially is going to pay it, after they pay all their expenses, do they have extra money in excess of their budget to be able to pay the other spouse? Mm-hmm. And that's really important. There has to be the ability to pay on one side in order for there to be spousal maintenance.
Right.
And so one person has to be short and the other person has to have the ability to pay. And then there can be a transfer from one person to the next. And then the question becomes, okay, well, how much is that going to be? Mm-hmm. And for how long, what duration mm-hmm. is that going to exist for? And so a lot of times it might be, well, maybe this can be, and there's some things that are thrown out there like, well, it's rehabilitative maintenance, or it's temporary, or maybe it's permanent. So it depends on, there's a number of factors that are outlined in Minnesota case law and statute that talk about, well, how long was the marriage? How long was one person at home? Mm-hmm. Was somebody working full time? Does somebody have, is there some education that somebody needs to attain? What was the standard of living during the marriage? All those things get looked at as far as determining what spousal maintenance is going to be. And so what may work for one person might not work for another, mm-hmm. depending on their situation. But basically, sometimes it's very common for there to be like maybe spousal maintenance goes until, you know, the person can go out and attain some additional education, and then maybe have another job lined up so they can be self-sufficient and support themselves. Mm-hmm. And ideally, that's kind of the goal, is what do we need to do so that both spouses can be self-sufficient and meet their budget needs.
Mm, okay. And what happens for the couples where both parties are working, or where the income is a little bit more balanced? Is there any kind of...
Yeah, so then there might not be any spousal maintenance at all.
Okay.
You know, because if you have enough income to meet your budget, you don't need spousal maintenance.
Right. Exactly.
And so that's kind of the issue. You know, maybe if you're nearing the retirement age and you aren't able to go out and find, like maybe you have a job that it just doesn't pay that much, mm-hmm. But you've been at home. So that was just a really flexible, convenient job to have. But now you're near retirement age and what are you going to do?
Right.
You know, so there might be permanent spousal maintenance attached to that person. Okay. To help them get through. Or maybe you're disabled and you can't work. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are all different factors that may play into this amount and this award. I will say that it's the most kind of gray area in divorce, and it's probably the most litigated area in divorce just because of the complications of there not being a formula mm-hmm. and because everybody's situation is so different.
I can see that. Well, and when you say that standard of living, you know, like trying to maintain mm-hmm. The standard of living that you are used to having mm-hmm. is probably a little bit tricky as well.
Yes, exactly. And figuring that out and figuring out the amount, you know, figuring out how long and what amount are the two things that are very difficult to do. And it gets into a very complicated situation because one person really needs the money, but they really don't want to ask for this money from the other side. And they really don't want to take that money, but yet they still need it to meet their budget needs. Mm-hmm. And so it gets really emotional. And also it's like, well, why aren't you helping me? We were married for, you know, 20 years and now you don't want to support me. It's like the emotional tie to this spousal maintenance number is huge.
I can see that.
And it comes down to sometimes people get really blocked in thinking that, oh my gosh, you're creating, you know, this dollar amount is kind of what they feel is like, well, this is what my marriage is worth to you. Mm. And they get into this thinking, and that's not really the case, and that's not how courts look at it, but that's the emotional side playing in and creating conflict and trying to figure out a solution.
Right. Well, I'm sure it's probably impossible to detach that, right?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So let's move into, we've talked a little bit about the kids. We've talked about the spousal maintenance. What other pieces of that cash flow part should we be thinking about? Or, you know, what other considerations are there when talking about this big picture of cash flow?
Yeah. And so sometimes when it comes to cash flow, and not so much for child support, but I've actually seen it done, is that one person just may not want to pay the other person a monthly amount for spousal maintenance. Mm-hmm. And so if there is a way to creatively figure that out, well, how do we come to a solution? Then maybe there could be like a spousal maintenance buyout, meaning once you figured out, you know, how to divide your assets and liabilities, maybe there can be a shift in some of the assets instead of doing a spousal maintenance payment.
Okay.
And so maybe there can be an unequal division of assets, and then there's no spousal maintenance instead. Or the spousal maintenance is reduced, and then the assets can be increased for that person instead. So sometimes you can think very creatively and come up with different options depending on what might work and what assets you have available to you.
Okay. So give me a couple examples of that. Like, who gets the house, maybe?
Yeah. So say, for example, one person has the house and they have to buy out the other person with some equity in the house. So say they do a refinance and they take out some extra money to do a property settlement. And they say, well, instead of paying the other person maybe an additional, you know, $1,000 a month for spousal maintenance, maybe I'll take out a little bit more if I have the ability to do that in my refinance, and I'll just give you a lump sum payment, maybe save an extra, you know, say if it's $1,000, you know, an extra $24,000 for 2 years of spousal maintenance. And that way you're buying that person out with equity in the home instead.
Okay.
And that way you don't have to have that transfer of money every month. It's the same because the person can then take that money. They can then invest that money. Mm-hmm. And it might be that, okay, well, sometimes there's some other nuances that go into this. I won't go into those details. But, you know, you can then invest that money and you can make money. You can earn interest on that money. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you can use that as additional funds to support yourself. Mm-hmm. So instead of getting that payment, you have that on your, you know, yourself on your side.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's wonderful. Are there any other questions that come up in the workshops kind of around this, in this topic that we haven't covered yet?
I'm trying to think. So spousal maintenance is always a big topic and people want to know about that mm-hmm. all the time. I mean, what, I get the question both ways. I mean, do I have to pay that? Is it required? Do we have to have spousal maintenance? And it's not required. It doesn't have to get paid. But if there is a big income differential and you've been married for a long period of time, then more than likely it's going to be a spousal maintenance case. Mm-hmm. So just kind of keep that in mind. But there are other ways of handling that than doing a monthly payment. You can come up with other solutions. And then the other thing I would say is, in regards to if you don't have to pay spousal maintenance and if it's not part of your issue, you still have to address it. And the one thing that a lot of times is written into divorce decrees is what's called a waiver of spousal maintenance. And that means if you write into that you waive your right to spousal maintenance and you put what's called it's a specific term because there was a case named after this, but it's called a Karen waiver. And that's, again, another legal term.
Okay.
But if you put that waiver and write that into your degree, that means that one person, that means you can't go back and then change your mind.
Ah.
So whatever you agree upon is your agreement for spousal maintenance. So if one person then gets injured or one person wins a lottery, this is a good example is like one person then, a couple of years after the divorce is final, someone wins the lottery. Well, you can't go after your spouse and say, well, now you have to pay me spousal maintenance.
Oh, I see.
You've waived your right to, in the future, do anything with spousal maintenance.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of times it'll be written, so what you decide then, and the courts are very stringent upon keeping that really strict that you can't change that modification.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, well, thank you for that. I'm sure there's just a lot of unique situations that come up and everyone has kind of their own, twists and turns as they're navigating this. Mm-hmm. Are there any other resources that you point people to if they do come to these issues of, well, I don't know how much, or maybe I'm a little bit blocked. I don't want to pay my ex. What are some resources out there that you would recommend for people?
Yeah. So, I think that's a really good point. I mean, one of the things that, I get a lot of is that people just don't know, and maybe they're negotiating with their spouse and they're like, their spouse is offering spousal maintenance and they don't know if it's a good deal. Or sometimes I get a lot, where I have, maybe they've done a mediation with just on their own. Mm-hmm. A mediator is neutral. They have to maintain that neutrality. They can't give advice or tell people what to do, but they can say, hey, I think you should maybe get advice from attorney if there's potentially a spousal maintenance issue. Mm-hmm. And so attorneys can give good advice on spousal maintenance, and that's kind of who you need. If you're unsure about where to go with that, then an attorney is someone that you'd want to talk to regarding spousal maintenance. Mm-hmm. Another person would be a financial person. There's two aspects to that. There's a financial neutral, but again, you can help them and that person can give options and ideas, but they can't say whether or not what to do. So sometimes if you say, well, I just need to consult with a financial expert, mm-hmm. They can really look at your situation and give you advice and tell you what to do in regards to the financial piece of it.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I think there are resources available on the Daisy Camp website for this as well.
Yeah. So the Daisy Camp website should have a resource page, and they can point out to different I think they have some financial listings on there that you can look at as well.
Yep. And so you just bring up daisycamp.org and go under resources. And I think that's where you'll find those. So Angela, thank you so much for speaking with us a little bit about this topic today. I really appreciate the wealth of knowledge that you have around this. And where can people find you if they would like to connect, if they would like more information?
Oh, sure. So my practice is out of Woodbury. I'm in the East Metro. Mm-hmm. You can find me at heartlaw.net. Mm-hmm. That's my website. And if you feel free to email me with questions, I am available to respond. My email is angela@heartlaw.net.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Angela.
Yeah, thank you.
It's been a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for showing up today and investing a little time in yourself. If you found this episode helpful but would like to dive deeper, come over to www.daisycamp.org and check out our community resources. We also have recommended reading and upcoming events, both in person in the Minneapolis area and worldwide through our online webinars. Daisy Camp's board, staff, and speakers volunteer their time and are here to help you. Come on over and get involved. We'd love to have you join us. Thanks again, and keep listening.